The following programming is sponsored by Carol Captus Holloway. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Well, good Monday afternoon. How is everyone today? I am feeling better after the last 2 weeks. It's been kind of crazy. You are listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway, and I'll tell you why it's been crazy in a couple minutes. But you can listen live right here at WWDB and on the radio at 860 AM, as well as Odyssey and our podcast. So we got all of that out of the way. So why are things crazy? Well, I saw this great saying today, and I can't help but share it with you, especially in light of today's show. And it is a quote from The Tempest, William Shakespeare, and it says, "Hell is empty and all the devils are here." And I kind of feel that way. Do you? You know, I just keep turning around and I keep seeing meanness everywhere and craziness everywhere and spitefulness, and people are lacking kindness. And over the last 2 weeks, I actually have lost count of how many friends, associates, and family members I have lost in the past 2 weeks. And I mean lost as in hopefully swept up to heaven. If you believe in that, I feel like God just came down and did a big clean sweep over the past 2 weeks. And, you know, that's what got me thinking about this saying, hell is empty and all the devils are here, because a lot of these people were, most of these people, maybe all of these people, to the best of my knowledge, were really good people, and now they're gone. And why do I bring that up today? Why do I bring that particular saying up today? Because right now in our world, we have a global identity crisis that is emerging in our world. You're aware of it. It's being hounded everywhere. Your banks are telling you about it. People are telling you be secure, that cyber attacks are coming. And as I said, a global identity crisis is emerging with 71% spike in cyber attacks and billions of credentials compromised on the dark web. So, you know, my ex-mother-in-law, God rest her soul, would say the devil is dancing right now because the world is in such chaos. So I thought this would be a really interesting topic. Even though I've talked about it before, I haven't had somebody like this on to talk about it. And joining us very shortly will be a pre-recorded segment that I did the end of last week amidst all the stuff that I was dealing with, you know, hearing about all these different people in my life that were just like gone. But coming up in a couple minutes is a pre-recorded segment that I did with Michelle Alvarez, and she is a manager at IBM X-Force Strategic Threat Intelligence Team, and she has so many years of cybersecurity under her belt, specializing in threat research and communications. So I thought she would be a perfect person to have on our show to talk about what's going on in the world with all this theft that's going on and these cyber attacks and our bank accounts and our emails and our just basically our wallets and the increased security that we need in our on our accounts. So we're going to talk about what we can do and how to keep that from happening. In 2023, cyber criminals saw more than an opportunity to log into our accounts versus hack into a business using us users, valid accounts as unbeknownst to us. And then if you do a credit check on your account, you might find that your information was on the dark web many, many, many times. And this is one of the most popular ways in for cyber criminals in the last year. And according to the research, there was a 266% rise in info stealer malware designed to specifically steal our credentials. And like I said, our emails, our bank accounts, our crypto wallets, and so much more. And we are going to learn how we can start to leverage a little bit of that AI to help us, because gaining access to user accounts is becoming increasingly easier for cyber criminals as they are beginning to leverage AI for their malicious objectives. So this is really, really important. And just last year, there were over 800,000 posts on the dark web focusing on AI and GPT, reaffirming cyber criminals' interest in these technologies. So that's really important for everybody to know. Extortion-based accounts attacks continue to be a driving force of cybercrime in this past year. And there was a 12% drop in ransomware attacks on a lot of enterprises, but more and more criminals are choosing to steal and threaten us to leak data for ransom. So we're going to talk about that in just a couple minutes. And then coming up in the second half of the show, you heard me talk about our crypto wallets. And I have a really great guest that'll be joining me in the second half of the show. John Hoffman is the head of distribution and partnership at Grayscale, which is the world's largest crypto asset manager. So if you're going to protect your cyber accounts, you need to understand crypto and how you're going to protect it. And we're going to be discussing that it has now been opened. The SEC is now opening trade with spot Bitcoin. And when we get to that segment in the second half of the show, I'll break it down for you and explain what the SEC is, what the rules and regulations are, and what we can do about Bitcoin and how many types of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency there are out there. But first, I wanted to jump into, like I said, a pre-recorded interview that I did. I did it early in the morning last week, the end of last week, amidst a bunch of just bad news coming down the pipeline. You know, I'm trying to think spring and being happy and more hours of sun and warmer weather. But then you have all this stuff going on and you're just like, oh, my gosh, what more can I take? Well, I took on this interview because I felt with, you know, all the devils are here and the devils are dancing right now. I thought that crypto and cyber attacks were definitely in the news and great information. It's a global identity crisis. So with Michelle coming on in just a second, we're going to learn more about increased cyber attacks and how they are exploiting us and how we can become proactive in protecting themselves from cyber criminals. So let's get that audio up and let's welcome Michelle. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Well, good morning, Carol. We're glad you're here.
I am glad you are here. I am really following the latest stories and headlines these days. So can you tell our listeners more about this emerging crisis with cybersecurity?
Absolutely, Carol. So really what we're seeing is a global identity crisis emerging. So in our report, the IBM X-Force Threat Intelligence Index, we talk about this global identity crisis because we are seeing a 71% increase year over year of the use of valid credentials to log into organizations versus hacking in. And so these credentials, right, they're your username and password combinations. And so attackers are really finding that they have found the path of least resistance. And the issue is that our online identity is constantly expanding. So we have so many online services and so many accounts that we've created, we might not even know which ones we have, right? We definitely might forget a few. Let's say there's a breach, we get a notification about a particular account. Well, maybe we don't even know if we've used that same password email combination or password username combination against another account. And all of this information, Carol, is just making its way to the dark web. It's for sale. You know, for a few dollars, maybe $10, attackers can purchase this information. And they're banking on the fact that you have reused your password against other accounts. And they're going to be able to log into those other accounts. And really, you know, more and more our identity is exposed and it's irreversible. I mean, once it's out there on the dark web, there's nobody to call up and ask, hey, can you remove my account information? I don't want it there on your site anymore. So why this is so significant.
So, Michelle, I mean, there's been so many cyber hacks lately. I keep getting notices, particularly last year, that my information was on the dark web. And then I go and look at what they have, and they might have my username, but they don't have my password. They'll show part of a password, and it's an incorrect password. What does that mean?
Right. So, you know, essentially, you know, they're just gathering all of the intel that they can. So maybe they have pieces of your information from one particular breach, but from other breaches, they're able to sort of piece together this complete picture. And so they're reusing, right, they're leveraging these credentials that are out there and, you know, banking on the fact that you are reusing your username and password against other accounts. And another way that they're, you know, gleaning your credentials and your information is they're investing in malware that does just that. Info stealing malware. We saw a 266% increase in the use of it. And so there, it's really just kind of twofold, right? We already have these billions of credentials out there readily available for attackers. Plus, they're leveraging these info stealing malware to then glean additional credentials from their targets. And so this combination is really why we're just putting a significant spotlight on this global identity crisis.
So Michelle, are they more or less going after the big companies? Like I've been hacked by T-Mobile. I shouldn't say I've been hacked. T-Mobile has been hacked several times. Other companies have been hacked several times. So they take the information from the big corporations and drill it down to us, the little people, or are they trying to go after us directly?
So there's definitely, you know, a combination of issues. So the big perspective here is that there's cyber attacks and where there's financial motivation, they're going to go after easy targets, right? So they're going to go after organizations as well as end users, a small, medium business, wherever they see that there's ROI. So what we have to do is make it difficult for them and so that we're less of a target, basically, right? We don't want to be the path of least resistance for them. So there's things that we need to put in place as consumers to make it difficult for attackers.
Let's talk about these things we need to put in place. I know I can have a Google says, oh, you can have a password saver on your computer. Well, I'm afraid to do that. What if my computer gets hacked? Won't they get all my Google passwords?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, practicing good password hygiene, right, Carol? I mentioned to a great extent, we're reusing the same passwords across accounts. And that's really what attackers are banking on. So we want to make sure we're using unique passwords first and foremost, right, across all of our accounts. What all our accounts, right? How many do we have? Which ones are there? If there is a breach, do you know which ones you need to reset? Setting reminders for ourselves every 3 to 6 months is important, right? What's your risk tolerance? Maybe you want to reset it every 3 months, maybe every 6 months, but you should be resetting your passwords. And then I mentioned, you know, let's make it difficult for attackers. And one really great way to do that is to enable multi-factor authentication, MFA. It's that extra layer of protection, right? That roadblock where, you know, we have seen time and time again, when attackers come up against an account with MFA enabled, they don't even bother, right? You know, few and far really try to go after an account where there's MFA enabled. So let's make it difficult for them. Let's put into various steps into our everyday cyber hygiene that will make it difficult for the attackers to target us.
So you're saying MFA enabled. What exactly is that? I've never heard that term before, I have to be honest.
Okay. So MFA is just multi-factor authentication. It's that extra layer of protection. So, you know, maybe a code is sent to another device like your phone.
Oh.
And so basically, yeah, it's two steps to get to
two
your account.
Two-step
right?
or three-step verification. I got
gotcha. Absolutely.
Oh, duh. So,
no, well, you know what, Carol? This is not necessarily common knowledge. And that's why we're here talking about this, because you know, once you put a spotlight, once you have user awareness, then it becomes common knowledge and everyone's talking about it, much like everyone started to talk about phishing, right? There's maybe not, you know, a spotlight previously on this particular issue. And so that's what we're doing here. So sharing awareness, multi-factor authentication. It maybe traditionally has seemed like an inconvenience, but now it's necessary, right? We want to protect our identities. It's one extra step and it's really important.
Okay, so I use that. Okay, I feel safer now.
Okay.
I hope listeners do.
Good.
Can you tell me more about saving passwords on your computer? Is that a safe thing to do?
So I think, you know, the use of password managers can definitely streamline and make this, you know, a little bit more manageable. I think consumers need to do their due diligence. Research, there's a lot of resources out there to, you know, determine the pros and cons between different password managers. You know, nothing is bulletproof, right? I think that's kind of the bottom line here. Nothing's bulletproof. What we have to do is do various measures, right? Simultaneously, like I said, you know, great password hygiene, not reusing across various accounts, multi-factor authentication. You can use a password manager to, you know, streamline all of this, but really, you know, it's multifaceted. So you got to do the work, right? Multiple steps to protect yourself.
So with everything that you're saying, we've heard of companies being extorted for money and usually like crypto money, which is amazing. How does that come into play and how does that affect us?
Absolutely. So extortion is essentially, you know, the attacker's objective, right? Their objective, especially cyber criminals, they are profit motivated. So extortion is a means to get that profit, right? Whether it's ransomware and they hold data hostage and it's encrypted and they ask for ransom in return for a decryptor, or they steal information, right? With use of those info stealing malware, and then hold that also for ransom. So that's the means in which they are extorting money from organizations and individuals.
So what could our listeners do? I think this is going to become more and more prevalent as we get closer to the election and thereafter, as other countries are desperately trying to steal information. What can we do if we open up our computer and see that something's not right, that maybe somebody is holding our information for ransom?
Certainly. So, you know, I think, you know, there are lots of services out there that can assist with if you are concerned that there's a cyber threat on your laptop or you've downloaded malware. So again, you know, researching what solutions or services are out there for the everyday consumer. You know, obviously enterprises are doing what they can to detect these attacks and safeguard your information. And, you know, from a consumer perspective, again, it's the things I've already sort of mentioned around identity and safeguarding your identity through password hygiene.
Right, through MFAs. We've been spending a lot of time here at Tell Me More talking about AI, artificial intelligence, and how it's impacting us on so many different levels. How will AI impact the attacks that are going on and are becoming more dominant?
Absolutely. So, you know, if we look at history and we look at new technologies that have emerged, typically what we see is, you know, businesses are leveraging it for good and attackers will eventually leverage it for evil, right? So same thing with AI, artificial intelligence. Organizations are going to leverage it to optimize their everyday operations and processes. Same goes for attackers. So they're going to use AI to create more deceptive phishing. They're going to use AI to sift through all of this stolen data and figure out which are the best targets, who's going to be most likely to be compromised if I target them. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of interest on the dark web. We saw over 800,000 posts from, you know, the evil malicious doers on the dark web regarding AI. So they see the value in it, Carol. So they're going to leverage it to the best of their ability, and they're going to eventually invest more and more and seeing how that can be successful for them.
So for people that are listening, I know I follow my credit report pretty actively, extremely actively, and people should be doing that. So what if we see, like I have seen these hits, oh, your information was exposed on the dark web. What do we do then? change the passwords.
Absolutely, right? And it goes back to, you know, do you have an inventory of all of your accounts, right? All of the online services where you've created accounts, do you have inventory of that? Do you know where you need to reset your passwords? That's first and foremost, right? And that's the best way really to kind of take control of the threats that are out there. They're not going away, but we can set, you know, things in place to best protect ourselves.
So let's, besides the MFAs and, you know, two-step verification, are there other things that we can do? I did hear you say change your password like every 3 to 6 months. That would drive me crazy when you have maybe 30 different accounts, you know, people that go shopping on Amazon, people that go shopping on PayPal, people that have their Verizon accounts, they have their food shopping accounts, their bank accounts, et cetera, et cetera. I can go on and on and on. And you're, it sounds to me like you're saying they should all be different and changing them on a regular basis. People are going to be like, people are lazy. Let's face it, Michelle. Sorry, listeners, but let's be honest.
So, yeah. You know, but what I mean, even worse, you know, is if your identity is stolen. I mean, that is such a worse headache than maybe having to reset your password. And I think each individual needs to kind of assess their own risk tolerance, right? So maybe it's not 3 months, but it's 6 months. A lot of organizations force anyway a password reset, right? So maybe there's not, you don't actually have to remember to do all of your accounts, but you have to know which ones maybe that you do need to reset because there isn't a forced password reset. So, you know, I think it's kind of like you have to look at both things that could happen. What is the risk, right? What's my risk tolerance? And what are some of the things that I can do? You know, again, maybe you don't reset every 3, but you do it every 6, but you also make sure that you have MFA, right? And that you're not reusing your passwords. I think that really is most key. You're not reusing the same password across accounts.
I mean, extortion is huge right now. I mean, I think it's pretty much every day we're hearing somebody has been getting hacked or some healthcare agency or, you know, whatever. So what about the companies themselves? Here we are saying, okay, we're going to do, we as individuals are going to do our due diligence and change our passwords and do the things that we have to do. But where's the protection for these larger companies that might be getting hacked and therefore, even though we're changing our passwords, they're getting our information.
Right. So, you know, what we see across, you know, our global telemetry is that there are definitely organizations are looking at security. This is a priority. And they are taking, you know, steps to protecting our information. So, you know, what we did see, we saw a decline across large enterprises in ransomware, a 12% decline in ransomware. And that's because organizations have come a really long way at detecting the activity that could lead to a ransomware attack. So we are seeing definitely improvements across the security posture of many organizations. But again, you know, attackers will get through. And so I think both organizations and consumers alike just need to kind of continue to put steps in place and processes in place to mitigate the risk.
So here's two questions for you. Is the cloud safe?
So there's...
I have to ask them.
Right. So the, you know, the cloud, and we've actually, we have a report that we put out, the IBM X-Force Cloud Threat Landscape Report. So again, just like with any technology, I talked about AI and other previous technologies that, you know, once organizations start really leveraging a particular technology, that's going to make it a target regardless because attackers are going to see the value in that. So just like anything else, right, our physical systems, we need to protect the cloud. So, you know, targets are, you know, going to be cloud, it's going to be AI, you know, other systems that we all use in our every day to day. And there's obviously things that we can do to then protect ourselves against those threats. But once attackers see value in a particular technology, that's where they're going to go because that's where the ROI is.
So, Michelle, we're seeing, like you said, the cyber attacks, the phishing going on, maybe individuals are getting it. It seems to be my understanding that a lot of this is coming from third world countries. Is IBM able to zero in all their research where the most cyber attacks are coming from or anything that we should be alerted to?
Well, really, we're seeing cyber attacks from everywhere, right? And there's not one particular nation where cyber attacks are coming from. You know, cyber criminals aren't necessarily associated with a particular nation. So, you know, more broadly speaking, cyber attacks are coming from various different types of threat actors and threat groups. And we research both, you know, nation state as well as cyber criminal threat groups. And so there's significant activity from all those different types of groups. And it really depends on the target and what the motivation is. And what we largely see is financially motivated cyber criminals.
And I know I'm getting close on time here, but how serious is our government taking this?
Well, I don't know if I can comment necessarily on how serious
our
government is taking this. But, you know, I definitely see that there has been references to, you know, securing our critical infrastructure. So I think there are measures in place that we are taking this seriously. Organizations, whether it's private or government, obviously there's a lot of awareness out there around security and how we need to protect our data.
So the best advice that you would tell our listeners is two-step authorization, keep those passwords changed on a regular basis. Anything else you would like our listeners to know with all of your 20 years of cyber experience, Michelle?
So, you know, we have IBM.com/X-Force, where we have a lot of information on all of the cyber threats that are out there, including our annual threat report. So I encourage everyone to go out there and check out all of the information.
Michelle Alvarez, thank you for spending time here with Tell Me More and telling our listeners things that they can do to protect themselves. We're going to continue to talk about this. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Carol. Appreciate it.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too.
So this is something I think we all take for granted. And even if I feel like I'm beating a drum every week talking about AI and cybersecurity and things like that, it's really important that we understand the tactics that attackers are using and that it's so important that we protect our information. I was all over Michelle's website, IBM X-Force. It's IBM.com X-Force, but on there you can learn about actions that you can take. You can learn about the key statistics, the overview. You can watch webinars. You can actually schedule a consultation because this is what they do day in and day out with the cyber attacks that are happening in our world today. So join with the X-Force analysts so that you can get the latest threats to intelligence with the groups that are out there and exactly the exploitation that is coming to surface every single day. So I am guilty, and I'm sure many of you are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Carol, we've heard it before. Yeah, I do that. I do MFA, which I felt silly when I asked that question. But you know what? I'm glad I did because it just reinforces. So it's really important that we take the time to do it. And that's what it comes down to. Like I said, the last 2 weeks for me have been a whirlwind. It's been crazy. And that's what happens in our life every day. Life just keeps on going and life just keeps on going by. And we keep saying, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. And then we don't do it. And then it's too late, just like life. So protect yourself, be proactive, and try to do the best that you can do with your finances and your computer protection and everything else that Michelle and I talked about. If you missed any part of that interview with Michelle Alvarez from IBM X-Force, please go back and listen to the podcast. We are going to take a quick commercial break here, and then we are going to come back and we're going to talk about crypto. Yes, because that needs to be protected too. I am so naive when it comes to this. So this is going to be a great topic of conversation. You are listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway, and we will be right back.
Our house in the middle of our street. Hi, this is Carol Holloway from Home Improvement Fix and Facts. Listen to me live every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 right here at WWDB. And if you can't listen live, make sure you go to WWDBAM.com and listen to my podcast. Each week, we will give you great ideas on how to fix your home and some facts on how to put it all together. In the middle of our streets,
our house. Hello, this is Erin, and I have a very important message. If you or a loved one is suffering with any sort of crisis, there is no need to do it alone. Dial the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where trained professionals will handle your case and get you the help you need any day, anytime. All reports are fully confidential. Dial 988, and a responder will do everything they can to assist you. Remember, if you see something, say something. You may just be saving someone's life. Remember, 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Hotline.
Listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway, and I am excited that you are still here listening. One of the things that I thought it was great to combine these two things together, which was cyber attacks and crypto, the easy way to do it, as they say, the SEC recently approved 11 spot Bitcoin ETFs, that's exchange trade funds. And I did not know anything about it. Like, have you ever heard of spot Bitcoin ETFs? I never heard of them before until I got the information about this interview. And they're making a lot of news these days. And with the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, approving some of these spot Bitcoins, we're going to see that the floodgates have opened for all types of investors. And so many people have talked about cryptocurrency for so long. I really don't know a lot about it, not smart in that area. And I'm sure a lot of you might not know exactly what it is. So I thought it would be interesting to bring it to light and find out if it's something that people are interesting. So the SEC, as I said, the Securities and Exchange Commission, is an independent federal agency. It was established pursuant to Securities Exchange Act in 1934, headed by a five-member commission. And they oversee what is happening in those particular areas of the government, U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. There's actually a website, SEC.gov, if you want to know more about who they are and what they do. But the SEC rules help provide avenues for small businesses to raise capital effectively from both public and private markets so they can create new jobs, develop life-changing innovations and technologies, grow the economy, and create opportunities for investors. And this is one of those opportunities for investors. So I like to give you a little bit of background behind that and what, you know, why they are playing a strategic part in what's happening right now. And spot Bitcoin ETF investors have an opportunity to trade Bitcoin at market prices in a place that has the comfort of familiarity in the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ. And I do believe people were buying before, but I don't think it was ever anything that was regulated. And now that the so-called floodgates are opened, it's important that we try to make sense of what all of this is about. So jumping on board to join us and help explain it, and then after our interview, we'll try to break it down a little bit more, is John Hoffman, and he is the head of distribution and partnerships at Grayscale, and they are the world's largest crypto asset manager. Prior to joining Grayscale, John was head of America's ETFs and index strategies at Invesco, which he joined back in 2006. I know you guys have heard of these companies. At Invesco, he held positions including head of distribution for registered investment advisor division, private client group, and personal investing platforms, head of ETF distribution for all retail channels in the United States, and global head of ETF capital markets and institutional sales.
So I'm not just bringing anybody on board to talk to us. I'm bringing somebody that has the goods and the credentials to back it all up. And I really do want to know more about crypto and what it's all about and what this spot Bitcoin is. So joining us now is John Hoffman. Uh-oh, did I lose you, John? Hello?
Hi, John.
Hi, Carol. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was kind of excited to talk about this crypto for newbies and glad that you could come on, but there's so many kinds of cryptocurrency. I'm hoping that you can help us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Excited to talk about this today.
Absolutely. So tell me more about what crypto for newbies is and why do we need it in our portfolio?
Yeah, so I think we need to take a little bit of a step back and talk about crypto, as you said, kind of more broadly. Crypto is, and digital assets specifically, and Bitcoin is one of it, one of the cryptocurrencies, started in 2009. January of 2009, Bitcoin started. So it's been operating for over 15 years, continuously uninterrupted. So the network has been getting stronger and stronger every single day, day over day, week over week, month over month, year over year. And again, 15 years of continuous operation. It really is a technological innovation that is transforming finance in a lot of ways. One of the largest innovations in finance of our time, which enables you to send money to anyone, anywhere in the world, at any point in time without an intermediary. That's one of the use cases for this. I think what's really important about this is it's a technology, it's software, and technology has many different use cases and applications. So if you think of, the internet as a technology and how many different use cases there are, that's similar with cryptocurrency. So for example, Bitcoin, which is the largest cryptocurrency with over $1 trillion in assets, has many use cases. Some people view it as a digital store of value. Some people think about it as a digital gold. Some people think of it as a digital money. And it is all of those things and has many different applications. And so really transforming the way that we live, the way that we work, and the way that we play.
So it's a lot of information, and I've been having a hard time wrapping my head around it. I remember back in January of 2009, there was something online where I was playing, and I was paid in Bitcoin, but then I lost track of it over all these years, and I'm like, damn, that must be worth a fortune now, wherever it might be. So it does have real value.
It absolutely does. So first off, if you have Bitcoin from 2009, that is you definitely want to find that that device or wherever that is, because that's 2009. It was way less than a dollar, and today we're over $55,000. So if you can find that Bitcoin you were paid in, I think you're gonna have a good day.
Which would be great.
Yeah, that's so, absolutely. But go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, the SEC, which is the Securities and Exchange Commission, sets the rules for this. Are they setting proper rules to help people understand Bitcoin?
So this year, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, granted approval for spot Bitcoin ETFs, which is really bringing together, I know that's a lot of jargon there, spot, Bitcoin, and ETF. So I'll break that apart for a second. But it's really bringing together two of the most transformative technologies in finance, exchange-traded funds, that's the ETF part, which is really about making it easy to invest. And ETFs have really transformed the investment landscape. Today, there's over 3,000 ETFs here in the United States with over $8 trillion of assets. So it's been a very modern way to invest across stocks, bonds, commodities, really all asset classes. The real breakthrough was this year, as I mentioned, the Securities and Exchange Commission granted approval to spot Bitcoin ETF. So again,
taking ETFs and Bitcoin, which I have referenced as kind of two of the most significant innovations, and bringing them together. So now you can buy or invest or trade Bitcoin directly from your brokerage account in these new spot Bitcoin ETFs, such as GBTC, which is the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, which is the world's largest Bitcoin ETF.
So I'm just trying to break it down, because like you're speaking a whole different language to probably me and a lot of our listeners. So how do we go about purchasing it?
So the ETF, so we'll use GBTC as an example. That's the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. It trades on an exchange. So much like you would buy, you know, shares of common stock in your brokerage account or your investment account, you can now buy, you know, for example, one share of GBTC. The price in the market, you know, is somewhere between $40 and $50, again, depending on where Bitcoin is trading. And this makes it easy to add Bitcoin to your portfolio. So GBTC, again, is the ETF. So that's the symbol that you would use to invest in Bitcoin. And the fund, again, GBTC, actually holds Bitcoin. So the only purpose of that fund is to hold Bitcoin. And so if you own GBTC, it's going to track generally the price movement of Bitcoin here in the U.S.
Okay. So say our listeners are saying, well, you know, $50, $100, let me buy a share or two, and they hold on to it, it's going to go up in value. How do you cash it in?
Yeah, so the ETF, as it holds Bitcoin, so its only value is based on the underlying Bitcoin. So its price is going to follow the price of Bitcoin. If you were to buy a share of it, just like you would in your brokerage account, by entering that symbol and buying or selling, you would do the same thing in reverse if you were ready to, turn that back into, let's say, U.S. dollars in this instance. You would simply enter a sell order in this instance for GBTC and sell it at the market price.
So, John, there's all these things. You're talking about Bitcoin. Is that the safest one as opposed to Tether or Ethereum or Binance Coin or Dogecoin or any of those other things that are out there? Is it the safest?
Yes. So it's the largest. It's also been around the longest. So it's the largest. I'll start there. It's over $1 trillion in assets in Bitcoin. It's a global technology, so it's held by investors in nearly every country in the world, and it's been around, as I mentioned, the longest. So it started in 2009. The second largest is Ethereum, which is a little bit smaller than Bitcoin, but is the second largest. And again, you have to think about this as a technology. It's really software. It's a piece of code. That ultimately creates many different applications and use cases. And I think to your point, there's quite a few different cryptocurrencies available. Each has different risk profile and different users. Bitcoin, again, is the largest by the number of users, by the size of the network, by the time that it's been running. But again, these have historically been very volatile. As they've grown over the last 15 years. And I think investors should definitely consider that as they're thinking about investing in this asset class.
Well, John, I appreciate that you told us more about Bitcoin. We're going to continue to talk about it here. And where can we go for more information?
Yeah, so I'd invite you to visit www.grayscale.com. That's grayscale.com. That's grayscale.com. We produce research on that site. You can read more about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. You can learn more about GBTC, the Bitcoin ETF, as well on that website. And we invite you to visit there.
Awesome. I thank you so much. I wish we had more time, but I know you're a busy man today. So thank you for sharing some information with us. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me. Greatly appreciate it.
Definitely. Take care. Bye-bye.
I'm sorry, I was having a little bit of a mic problem there. It sounded like I was a little far away, but hopefully it sounded good to you. So just to let everybody know, I have been tracking the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust while we're talking to John the whole time. And depending on, of course, what types of services you use, it's averaging about $60 a share. For those of you that want to get involved in something like this, that's a small piece to pay. I mean, it's basically been going up and down all day between, you know, $58 to $60, $61. So as I sit here and talk to you, I'm watching it change, which is really interesting. You heard me talk about Bitcoin and all the different types of information that are out there, all the different types of Bitcoin and Tether and Ethereum and BNB, which is Binance. It's another type of large cryptocurrency. There's another one called Solana. There are so many different types out there. So do your research if this is something that you want to do. I know somebody who invested in crypto, somebody that I know very, very well, invested in crypto, decided they were going to buy a house, pulled their money out of crypto, and then there was a tank of that market going back right before the election. And then, of course, they didn't put their money back in there. Maybe they should again. But it's really crazy because Bitcoin gets a lot of headline news. And when people are talking about cryptocurrencies with, I hate to say it, but I don't know a lot about it. That's why I had John on, and I'm still probably equally as confused because it's never cash in your hand. Cash goes out of your account when you buy it. But I'm still, you know, if anybody wants to come on, if there's any investors out there that really can break it down even more than John, because my time was so limited, I'd love to have you jump on board. I'm going to make a take a quick commercial break here, and then I'm going to be back to tell you a couple more upcoming shows. And I just want to share a little bit more about Grayscale with you and tell you where you can get more information about them. So quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway.
Hello, this is Erin, and I have a very important message. If you or a loved one is suffering with any sort of crisis, there is no need to do it alone. Dial the 988 Suicide and Crisis Hotline, where trained professionals will handle your case and get you the help you need any day, anytime. All reports are fully confidential. Dial 988, and a responder will do everything they can to assist you. Remember, if you see something, say something. You may just be saving someone's life. Remember, 988 for the Suicide and Crisis Hotline.
Hi, this is Carol Holloway from Home Improvement Fix and Facts. Listen to me live every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 right here at WWDB. And if you can't listen live, make sure you go to WWDBAM.com and listen to my podcast. Each week, we will give you great ideas on how to fix your home and some facts on how to put it all together. In the middle of our streets, our house.
Listening to Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. We were talking to John Hoffman from Grayscale Investments, the world's leading crypto asset manager. And I just wanted to make you aware of a letter that went out on March 11th from the United States Senate, where a couple of the senators were writing to the Honorable Gary Gensler, the chairman of the SEC, writing to urge them to take steps to protect investors following the recent approval of these certain types of Bitcoin. So it'll be interesting. The SEC's approval, part of their letter says the SEC's approval had provided a green light for Wall Street to sell volatile cryptocurrency investments to ordinary Americans through their brokerage and retirement accounts. Given the significant and unique risk posed by cryptocurrency, it is crucial that Americans receive accurate, comprehensive information about Bitcoin ETPs. In recent review by FINRA, F-I-N-R-A, and I do not know who they are, roughly 70% of brokers' communications with retail investors regarding
cryptocurrency violates fair disclosure rules. So that's just a part of this letter that you can find online from the United States Senate, addressed March 11, 2024, talking about cryptocurrency and that we are protected. And according to these two senators, they say, we believe that other cryptocurrencies show the trading volumes or integrity to support associated ETPs. And they don't believe that there's the protections there, nor do they believe that the markets for futures on other cryptocurrencies are likely to demonstrate the tight correlation with spot markets that would enable meaningful market surveillance to deter and detect bad actors. So obviously the Senate is taking a hard look at this, and they are trying to make sure that the SEC is doing everything that they can possibly do to make sure that we are protected if this is indeed something that we think that we are going to consider investing in. So that just gives you a little bit of a heads up on what's happening in the crypto market. Like I said, it's an area that I don't know a lot about, and that's why I wanted to talk about it here on the show and welcome anybody who really has a really great knowledge and understanding that can give me a little bit more than 10 minutes to talk about it. I would love to have you on the show. So definitely something I want to talk about. So spring is right around the corner, and Easter and all of that wonderful stuff is going to be happening in the next 2 weeks or so. So we have some fun interviews that'll be coming up about the spring holiday, the Easter holiday. And I think you're going to like it. It's going to be a little bit fun. And that one's going to be brought to us next week with Eggland's Best. I know that sounds so funny. I'm talking about eggs on my Tell Me More show. Because, you know, I think it's really funny because eggs went really high last year. And I talked to you about it right here on this show that people were saying, oh my gosh, we're being price gouged with eggs. It's inflation. But there was actually two causes for it. One was the avian flu, the bird flu that was going around. That was during Thanksgiving. And now they're talking about it again. So is it real or is it not? We're going to bring that to light because I've noticed that the prices of eggs went way down and now they're climbing back up again. I know, silly topic to talk about, but I thought it would be fun. And we have some other fun things coming up too. I know quite a long time ago we talked about sleep apnea, but now there's a new thing going on for sleep vacations. Have you ever heard of such a thing? I hadn't until I had the opportunity to have this interview come across my desk. So I'm going to be excited to talk to Dr. Robbins in the next week or two about sleep vacations and the overall fact that we are all pretty much sleep deprived in this country. So with that being said, I just want to remind everybody to remember to listen to my other show, Home Improvement Fix and Facts, that's on every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 with great information and fabulous topics. And you have to listen tomorrow if you want to know what we're talking about. But with today's show, I just wanted to point out to you that money can cause a lot of problems. If you don't know how to manage it properly, it can cause you problems. And maybe money management isn't the right term to use about managing your money. You know, how do you live with it harmoniously? And the key to having money and knowing how to incorporate it into your life involves having a healthy mindset around finances that don't control you 24/7. You need to have a philosophy around money. Seriously, people, you need to know, you know, how to protect yourself and what you can do to make it work for you and what you can do to be in the know and all of these things I'm talking about. You want to invest, by all means, go ahead and invest, but make sure you're protected, not just through a place like the SEC that's overseeing your crypto purchases, but your bank accounts as well. So money is a tool that we all need, and money doesn't necessarily, I have to give you a quote because it's at the end of my show. Money never made a man happy yet, nor will it. The more a man has, the more he wants. Instead of filling a vacuum, it makes one. That is a quote from our founding father, Benjamin Franklin. So the pursuit of money never ends when you position it as a measure of happiness. Instead, keep it as a tool and pursue what you love instead. So those are my words of advice here today on Tell Me More with Carol Holloway. I welcome you all back next week to listen again. Again, great topics coming up and something for everyone. Make sure you go back and listen to the podcast if you missed any part of today's show. And as always, pay it forward and make it a great week. We'll be back next Monday. Thanks for listening.